You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
September the 11th, 2020. September the 11th, 2020. 19 years ago. It's been 19 years since America came under attack. The worst attack on U.S. soil ever. This morning when I woke, and maybe you do the same, I try to begin with a quick prayer. And the first prayer was just, help heal this nation. This program over the next 2 hours is not going to have anything to do with politics. Now, folks can read into what they want and say, that's political, that's not the intent, and that is not going to be presented from my viewpoint at all. We're not going to talk about what divides us over the next 2 hours. Yes, I've got some thoughts about most recent events, as I'm sure many of you do, and maybe you were anxious to hear what I had to say, but I'm not going to do that today. We're not going to do it. We're not going to talk about what divides us. We're going to talk about what unites us and how we can come together as a nation and as we have in a tragedy. 8:46 a.m., Eastern Time, the first jet hit the North Tower. 9:37 a.m. Eastern Time, the second jet hit the South Tower. And, of course, then followed the crash in Pennsylvania and the hit at the Pentagon. I'm sure you remember where you were on that date as you began to hear the news. I was home. I did not have the TV on. My youngest daughter called and told me, and this was close to 9:37 Eastern, so we're looking at 8:37 Central Time. Called and said, Dad, a plane's hit the World Trade Center. Well, I thought, well, how did that happen? It must be terrible weather. And, you know, I turn on the TV and I see blue skies and the North Tower smoking, and I'm thinking, how did that happen? And then I see the second plane strike. And I realize it's no accident. We're under attack. I got in the car, rushing down to the station, see what we could provide at the TV station where I was at that time. And on the way, I'm listening to a radio reporter, and he says, the tower collapsed, the tower collapsed. And I'm thinking, that is sensational, beyond sensational. You don't say collapse, that means the whole thing came down. That couldn't have happened. As I walk in the newsroom, the second one is coming down, and yes, I realize it did happen. You're going to hear over the next 2 hours Andy Card, White House Chief of Staff, who told President Bush about the attack. You're going to hear the story of Tom Burnett on United Flight 93, credited with leading passengers to fight back. The words of Jack Buck at Bush Stadium, September the 17th, as we tried to, even though we were hurting still as a nation, to start again, to move forward, and a clip of the poem that Jack Buck wrote for that day. Hans von Kapowski is going to join us from the Heritage Foundation, but not for political issues, but discussions of his recollections of 9/11 and the healing. Our second hour is going to be a rebroadcast of a 9/11 program we did 2018. Many who heard that hour in 2018 say it included information and sound clips they had never heard. My director, Quentin, has gone back to that date, pulled that program together, so you can hear that again. And we're also going to be discussing coverage on this date as to how this event should be covered. And this is a excuse me, this is a battle I've waged repeatedly in newsrooms since the first attack. On any anniversary, on any anniversary you often play clips and video. Well, the first year you did it, and then the second year news director saying, no, let's not, it's just too horrific. Let's don't show it again. Well, then again, maybe on the 10th anniversary, and coming up next year be the 20th. I say the video should be played every year on the anniversary as a reminder, lest we forget, because many have forgotten. Many, of course, were not even born then or were too young to know what happened. I encourage you to let your friends and family know what we're going to do over the next 2 hours and join us. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
So are you ready to get out from the COVID-19 scare? We might still need to be careful in some areas. I do encourage businesses to make sure your facility is clear of COVID-19. And of course, if you open up and then a client or an employee or someone else surfaces with COVID-19, you need to reevaluate what's going on. I would encourage you to contact Wellington Environmental. They can determine at a very reasonable cost what you need to do before you open, once you are open, and as you move forward. It just makes good sense, doesn't it? Wellington Environmental, for 30 years, has been treating situations at hospitals, schools, daycare centers, private homes. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington Environmental.
This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal, 1-800-NEW-ROOF, 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
This just in, you are looking at obviously a very disturbing live shot there. That is the World Trade Center, and we have unconfirmed reports this morning that a plane has crashed into one of the towers of the World Trade Center.
That was one of the initial news reports coming out of New York that day, showing the smoking North Tower. September 11, 2001. Four coordinated terrorist attacks against the U.S. on that morning. In 102 minutes on that date, in 102 minutes, 2,977 were killed. When you add up the attacks in New York City, Washington, Shanksville, Pennsylvania, 25,000 injured. Of that number, among the dead, 343 New York City firefighters, 23 New York City police officers, 37 officers at the New York Port Authority. There were eight who survived, pulled out from the rubble later because they were in a lower level of one of the towers when they went down. The age of the victims ranging from 2 years to 85 years of age. Where were you that day? How did you find out? What was your first reaction? And I know you've seen the video from New York that day, from various documentaries and other news sources, showing the streets of New York, folks looking up just shocked. You could see it on their faces. They could not believe what they were seeing. When first there was just a fire in the building of the North Tower. And then even as a news crew was doing an interview with one of the fire departments located nearby, there was a sound of a plane flying overhead. The photographer zoomed up just quickly enough to grab it before it slammed into the tower. The second plane had hit. There's so many stories that came out of that day It began to unfold on that day with some advanced planning that had been put in by the terrorists who were taking part in it. And they had, five of them, had stayed in a motel prior to the attack just outside the gates of the National Security Agency. But on that date at 7:59 a.m. Eastern Time, American Airlines Flight 11, a Boeing 767 with 81 passengers, 11 crew members, departed from Logan International Airport in Boston, bound for L.A. It was 14 minutes late leaving. Five hijackers were on board. 8:14 Eastern Central Time. I should say Eastern Time. United Airlines Flight 175, a Boeing 767. 56 passengers, 9 crew members, also departed from Logan International in Boston, also bound for L.A. Five hijackers on board that plane. 8:14 that morning, Flight 11 is hijacked over central Massachusetts, turning first northwest, then south. 6 minutes later, American Airlines Flight 77, a Boeing 757, 58 passengers, 6 crew members departing from Washington Dulles International Airport for L.A., 5 hijackers aboard. 8:42, 22 minutes later, United Airlines Flight 93, a Boeing 757, 37 passengers, 7 crew members, departing 42 minutes late from Newark International, bound for San Francisco. 4 hijackers were aboard. There was supposed to be a 5th, but he had been detained by authorities because it seemed he had overstayed his visa, and they thought he was trying to stay longer in the country. Otherwise, he would have been on board, and that flight, Flight 93, is the one that went down in Pennsylvania. It is possible that if that 5th hijacker had been on board, we will never know, but it is possible if that hijacker had been on board, that plane might have made it to its destination in D.C., be it either the Capitol or the White House. Then at 8:46:40 Eastern, Flight 11 hits the north face of the North Tower between floors 93 and 99. Eastern. Flight 175 crashes into the south face of the South Tower of the World Trade Center between floors 77 and 85. And parts of that plane, including the starboard engine, leaving the building from its east and north sides, hitting the ground 6 blocks away. 9:37:46, Flight 77 crashes into the western side of the Pentagon. 9:45, U.S. airspace is closed, shut down, all planes, get out of the air, close it down. And orders given to shoot down any plane that would not respond and not land. 9:59 Eastern, the South Tower of the World Trade Center collapsing 56 minutes after being hit by Flight 175. 10:03:11. Flight 93 crashed into a farm field in Pennsylvania, southeast of Pittsburgh. 10:28:22, the North Tower of the World Trade Center collapses 1 hour, 42 minutes after the impact of Flight 11. 10:50:19, 5 stories of the Pentagon collapsed due to the fire. And 5:20:33 that afternoon, 7 World Trade Center, a 47-story building in that area of New York, collapses. And at first, everyone's thinking it's another bomb, but it was already heavily damaged and could not withstand. How did you get your notice? When did you see? How did you learn? President Bush at the time was not in Washington. He was in Sarasota, Florida, reading to school children. His chief of staff, Andrew Card, did an interview and talked about what was going through his mind, what he knew, and how he thought he should approach the president. This was an interview he did with MSNBC in 2016.
Before the president walked into that classroom of second graders at the Emma E. Booker School in Sarasota, Florida, he had been told, and I was standing right beside him when he was told this, it appears a small twin-engine prop plane crashed into one of the towers at the World Trade Center in New York City. That's what I knew he knew when he walked into the classroom. After he walked into the classroom and I was still left in the holding room, the door shut, and the director of the White House Situation Room, a Navy captain at the time, Deb Lauer, came up to me and said, sir, it appears it was not a small twin-engine prop plane, it was a commercial jetliner. And then a nanosecond later, she came up and told me, oh my gosh, another plane hit the other tower at the World Trade Center. That's when I contemplated my responsibilities as chief of staff. I opened the door, the classroom went in, and when it was appropriate, when the president was not participating in a dialogue with those young students, I walked up to him and leaned over and said, a second plane hit the second tower. America is under attack.
And many of you saw, since then, the video of President Bush as he gets the word from Andy Card. The president's sitting with a bunch of second graders in Florida. He's known before he walked in to meet with them. There's been a plane hit the World Trade Center, but at the time they think it's a small plane, and no one was thinking of an attack, an accident possibly. Maybe they were looking at possibility of an attack, but it was a small plane, they thought. And then you heard Andy Card talk about how it began to escalate. Then they realized what was happening and how they need to also inform the president. He took it in and listened. Andy Card said, I stepped back from the president after I told him. I didn't want him to even attempt to ask me any question. There were all photographers in the room, everything else going on. So I stepped back, gave the president time to think and reflect on the awesome duties and responsibility that had just fallen upon his shoulders. Later, when they'd made arrangements and had decided where and how they're going to move the president, he left. I dare anyone, and I'm not trying to be political here, I dare anyone to imagine yourself being the president and how you would have reacted when you were told that in front of these students. You certainly don't want to panic, but you just realize you're going to have to make some decisions that are going to involve possibly future American lives. And I talked earlier about the Flight 93, United Airlines Flight 93. William F. Buckley Jr. published today in National Review something that I want to share with you. It deals with Tom Burnett. Buckley said he had gotten a letter by Thomas Burnett Sr., whose son Tom died while attempting to retake control of United Airlines Flight 93 from the hijackers on that day. And he said, I thought you might find it of interest, the account of Tom's four cell phone calls from Flight 93 to his wife Dina, which she reconstructed from memory. And of course, he's very proud of his son, and he wanted to share what his wife had to say about those phone calls, the best she could recall them. And by her memory, Dina says she got a cell phone call at 9:27 that morning, Eastern. Her husband, Tom, Dina, Tom, you okay? No, I'm not. I'm on an airplane that's been hijacked. Hijacked? Yes, they just knifed a guy. A passenger? Yes. Okay. Just listen, he said. Our plane has been hijacked, United Flight 93, New York to San Francisco. We're in the air. Hijackers already knifed a guy. One of them has a gun. They're telling us there's a bomb on board. Please call authorities. He hung up. 9:34, the phone rang on call waiting. Tom's cell phone. Dina, hello. Tom said, they're in the cockpit. The guy they knifed is dead. He's dead. Yes, I tried to help him. I couldn't get a pulse. And then she told him, Tom, they're hijacking planes all up and down the East Coast. They're taking them, hitting designated targets. They've already hit both towers of the World Trade Center. And he said, they're talking about crashing this plane. Oh, my God. It's a suicide mission. He turns, talked to those around him. She said, who are you talking to? He said, my seatmate. He said, do you know which airline is involved? She said, no, they don't even know if they're commercial airlines or not. The news reporters are speculating. Cargo planes, private planes, commercial planes. No one knows. Dana said, they're not sure. At least three, maybe more. Tom, okay, do we know who's involved? She said, no. Tom said, we're turning toward New York. We're going to the World Trade Center. No, wait, we're turning the other way. We're going south. She said, what do you see? He said, just a minute, I'm looking. I don't see anything. We're over a rural area, just fields. I got to go. He hung up. 9:45, he calls back. She tells her the Pentagon's been hit. Were you aware? He said, no, I'm not. He tells people sitting around him, they just hit the Pentagon. She says, they think five planes have been hijacked. One still on the ground. All commercial. I haven't heard which airlines. All of them originating on the East Coast. Tom asked, do you know who's involved? She said, no. He said, I'm wondering what's the probability of their having a bomb on board. I don't think they have one. I think they're telling us that for crowd control. And his wife said, a plane can survive a bomb if it's in the right place. But they don't know anything about your plane. Then over the next few minutes, Tom begins to muster a group and do what they can. I'll pick up that part of the story in a moment.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So once again, we're talking about the drama that's taking place on board one of the flights. A husband talking to his wife, Tom Burnett, talking to his wife, Dana, by airphone. And they're beginning to realize, as she's told them, other planes have been hijacked and been crashed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And then Tom tells her they're talking about crashing this plane into the ground. We have to do something. I'm putting a plan together. She asked, who's helping you? Different people, several people, group of us. Don't worry, I'll call you back. At 9:54, and again, this is Dana recollecting from her memory as to how those calls went and what was taking place. She didn't have it on recording, but this is in turn being shared with National Review today and published in honor of her husband, Tom Burnett. 9:54, the call. Dana says, Tom, hi, anything new? No. Where are the kids? They're fine. They're sitting at the table having breakfast. They're asking to talk to you. Tell them I'll talk to them later. I called your parents. They know your plane's been hijacked. Oh, you shouldn't have worried them. How are they doing? They're okay. He said, we're going to take back the plane. And Dana, emphasizing, no, sit down, be still, be quiet. Don't draw attention to yourself. She had been a Delta Airlines flight attendant at one point in training, and they were told, and that was the practice then, anyone tries to take control of the plane, don't fight them. They're going to want something. They'll land, and then you'll figure it out. But Tom told her, Dana, if they're going to crash this plane to the ground, we got to do something. She said, what about authorities? He answered, we can't wait for authorities. I don't know what they could do anyway. It's up to us. I think we can do it. What do you want me to do? Pray, Dana. Just pray. Dana said, I love you. Tom's last words, don't worry, we're going to do something. But he was also talking to a GTE cell phone operator, air phone operator. And she says she heard him on there say, we're going to try to take it back. He said, I think we're all ready. And she said, I could hear him talking to other people. He said, let's roll. And they tried to take control of the plane, and the hijackers and fighting them off decide to fly the plane upside down and crash it there into Pennsylvania, where there is another large marker of that tragic day, set in the middle of a farm field where heroes died. And we don't know if that plane was intended to hit, as I say, the White House or the Capitol, but it did not make the destination the hijackers intended. so countless lives were saved. The second hour we're going to have today is a rebroadcast of a program we did for September 11, 2018. It's going to include some of the same information and more audio and a little bit more of the story of Tom Burnett and the conversation he was having and other storylines that maybe you've heard, maybe you haven't. A lot of folks that said when they heard that hour we presented in 2018, they were hearing sounds and information they had not heard before. So we'll be getting into that story as well in the second hour, going over rebroadcasting that one and some of the things that I think a lot of folks still may not have heard of. And look around you. Look around you right now. How many were too young to know really what happened that day? How many were not even born at that point? How many look at this as history, nothing more? I said earlier, this program today is not about what divides us, but what unites us. And what unites us is the love of Americans and this country. We're going to be joined in the next segment by Hans von Spakovsky for the Heritage Foundation, but not about politics. No politics today. Please stand by.
You can hear podcasts of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
I need to begin by clarifying something. The piece I was reading from National Review referenced Tom Burnett, who was on that flight that crashed in that Pennsylvania field. He was one of the ones helping fight, but it was Todd Beamer who was actually talking to the cell phone, air phone attendant, and told her, "We're going to try to take control." He's the one who said, "Let's roll." Todd Beamer. Joining us now is Hans von Spakovsky of the Heritage Foundation. Glad to have you on board, sir.
Well, thanks for having me on board.
Yeah,
I've been to see that memorial in Pennsylvania, and I can't tell you, it is a very emotionally moving place to visit.
I've seen pictures of it. I've not been there. I mean, it's just sitting right in the middle of farm field, right? I mean, it's just there.
It is. But one of the things they have at the memorial, which is very hard to listen to, is they have recording of the messages that the passengers left with their families and friends and loved ones. And I tell you, it is, I don't know how anybody could listen to that and not get very emotionally upset and, frankly, very mad about the criminals who did this.
Yeah, I was looking over some of those as well. We had devoted all 2 hours to this today. Second hour is something we ran in 2018, which included a lot of pieces of information folks had not heard up to that point. And I thank you for joining us because we were originally going to have a political discussion, but I put politics aside today. I want to focus on what unites us as opposed to divides us. And you're right, these audio recordings, I've heard some of them as well. I know there's one of a flight attendant who was on Flight 11 who was talking to flight services in Dallas saying, "Something's wrong, we're in a rapid descent all over, we're too low, we're flying too low, oh my God, we're way too low," and then you hear nothing else. How many others probably were trying to reach their loved ones, or like you said, Hans, left messages on cell phones or voice recorders because they weren't there to catch the call live?
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to remember and not forget that one of the reasons this happened was because we had built up all these walls between our intelligence services and, for example, our criminal justice folks at the Justice Department, so that when they essentially got intelligence about potential terrorist acts, it got walled off and then not distributed to other people that needed it. Plus, you know, I think for the first time, the Real ID Act is finally in place in all 50 states. And the whole reason that driver's license law was put in was because many of the terrorists who were in the country illegally had managed to get driver's licenses in states like Virginia, where I live, and that's what helped them be able to get airline tickets to get on these planes and to kill so many Americans.
I'd pointed out earlier the Pennsylvania flight had left with only four hijackers, where the others had five, because one of them had been held by authorities because they suspected he was overstaying his visa at the time, and he did not get to board that flight. Let me hear from you personally. Where were you, and when did you get the word? What happened?
Well, let me tell you something. I was a lawyer practicing in Atlanta, Georgia, and I was at my house packing a bag to catch a flight to Washington, D.C., because I was headed there for a job interview with the U.S. Department of Justice. And my wife, I'm upstairs, my wife calls up to me and says, oh, my God, a plane has just crashed into a building in New York. And I went down and took a look. And, you know, I know a lot of people say this after the fact, but I knew immediately it had to be terrorism when the first plane went in, because modern airplanes, with the kind of navigational other equipment they have, there was no way that could happen unless it was intentional.
You know, I shared with the audience, I first learned about it, my youngest daughter had called to tell me about it. I wasn't watching TV, and I'm thinking before I get the TV on, well, how did that happen? And she didn't say the size of the plane, and I'm expecting some terrible weather system or something, and even then I'm thinking, how would it happen nowadays? And then I see the clear blue skies, I think, how the hell did that? And then I see the second one hit, and then that's when I got on screen just before, I mean, started watching just before the second one hit. And that's when I realized, yeah, we have to be under attack. Now, the other thing that comes up every anniversary, and, of course, we're going to see the 20th next year. Being in television news, when I was with TV News, I fought every year that we should play it again, at least on that date, at least a clip of it. Well, of course, the first year, it wasn't that hard to get it on the air. Second, third, fourth, no. 5 year, okay, we got a little bit on. And then not again until the 10. In other words, some were saying it's just too disturbing, it's too traumatic. And I said, hell yes, and that's exactly why it should be played on this date. Your thoughts?
Oh, I agree. No, I agree 100% with you. It was the biggest attack that killed Americans, the surprise attacks of Pearl Harbor. And people need to remember this every year because there were so many times this could have been prevented and it wasn't. I mean, another one that I hate to mention it today, but remember, during the Clinton administration, our intelligence services gave Clinton, Bill Clinton, more than one opportunity to hit and take out Osama bin Laden, and he turned them down. And I think people, again, they forget that. And, of course, he was the brain trust and the money between what happened that day.
Well, as I said, I'm not trying to make this political today. My whole idea here was to unite, not things that divide us. What do you see in this that maybe can remind us with it, without looking at the various sectors, the arguments and the issues of color, race, police, law enforcement, to galvanize us again as we were over those period of days?
Look, I agree with that. I think, we have debates and we have vigorous civil fights in this country over many different issues. But I think people need to understand that it's like when you have an argument inside your family. It's something you keep in the family, and it's not something you take outside the family. And there are, unfortunately, many people around the world, frankly, evil people who hate America, hate everything we stand for, who want to kill Americans, want to destroy us. And even when we disagree on important issues as Americans about things like, you know, the Second Amendment or abortion, we should be united against, frankly, evil outsiders who don't care that we have disagreements. But if they had the chance to kill both of us, they would.
You're right about that. Hans, again, I appreciate you giving us some of your time on this date, sir. I do thank you.
Thank you very much.
You bet. Hans von Pakoski of the Heritage Foundation. By the way, as many of you will recall, flights came to a halt, as I read to you earlier, that they began to order all planes out of the skies, remember? Now, the day before 9/11 of that year, a World Golf Championship event was going to be held in St. Louis at the Belle Reve Country Club. I had a nephew in town, and I'd taken him out the day before, and I had tickets to go the opening day the next day, which would be 9/11. We'd gone out the preceding day, and we're within maybe 15, 20 feet of watching Tiger Woods do various trick shots and so forth, and excited to go back the next day. Well, of course, the next morning was 9/11. And even those golfers who were already here, if they had plans to get in their plane and go back home, they couldn't. The planes were grounded. And those who were stuck coming from international ports and so forth trying to get here, they were stuck wherever they were. And the whole nation came to a halt at that point. The U.S. and Canadian civilian airspaces closed until September 13th. I was asked to take part in a unity event that KMOX Radio put together, along with Channel 4 television at the time, at Forest Park. And there were religious speakers, Protestant and Catholic, an imam, Jewish rabbi, offering their prayers. And the eerie thing about it, too, was then you could look up, and when they finally got around to having that, you could see planes in the sky. But do you remember for that period of time that you couldn't see any planes in the sky? And then when they did begin to appear, and they loosened those restrictions, began to let them resume, how many of you looked up at a plane in the sky and watched it closely until it was out of sight? And how many would not get on a flight for a period of time? And, of course, how do you resume? How do you go back to, quote, normal life after something like that? Normal life also included baseball in September. St. Louis, a big Cardinal baseball town. And legendary broadcaster over KMOX Radio, Fox, Cardinal broadcaster Jack Buck, had some words. In fact, wrote a poem about trying to move forward. We come back, you're going to hear Jack Buck at Busch Stadium. This will be on September the 17th. That's when Wall Street reopened and the nation tried to start over again. Please stand by. It's coming up next.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
I don't know about you, but as for me, the question has already been answered. Should we be here? Yes. The Cardinals and the Milwaukee Brewers and all of baseball welcome you back to Busch Stadium and this special evening in memory of those who lost their lives in New York, Washington, and Pennsylvania, and in honor of the heroic rescue workers and the pride that we have in our country, which we shall show you here this evening. Making their way towards the second base area are the color guards representing the American Legion, the St. Louis City and County Police Departments, the St. Louis Fire Department, and fire departments from around our area. Following them, our area firefighters bringing in our nation's flag. Ladies and gentlemen, we all now know about our police and firemen and the work that they always have done for us. Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to read a poem which I have written for this occasion. We have been challenged by a cowardly foe who strikes and then hides from our view. With one voice we say, we have no choice today. There is only one thing to do. Everyone is saying the same thing and praying that we end these senseless moments we are living. As our fathers did before, we shall win this unwanted war, and our children will enjoy the future we'll be giving.
The words of Jack Buck, September the 17th, 2001. I did compress and edit some of the poem so we could get it on the air because we had some other things I wanted to point out to you here. The World Trade Center's standing at 90 stories high when they were hit by those planes. There was another tragedy unfolding in front of everyone before they collapsed. About 100 to 200, primarily in the North Tower, were trapped by fire and smoke, could not get out, and began jumping. And many were recorded falling to their deaths. One firefighter at street level was killed when one of the jumpers landed on him. They couldn't do an airborne evacuation. The smoke was too dense. No way to get any airborne lift. And they chose to go that direction rather than die inside the fire. But then, of course, the buildings ended up coming down completely. Now, I want to remind you, every time you see those pictures, when you see those planes strike, the fraction of a second before the nose of the plane touches the glass, those on the plane in panic and fear, and those inside seeing the plane in panic and fear, and in the next flash, they're gone. And when you watch the buildings come down, there were still many inside who never got a chance to get out. Americans dying in front of you. There was a blind man who was in the North Tower on the 78th floor. I say a blind woman, I'm sorry. Let me correct it again. I got so much information from me. It is a man who is blind. The dog is a female. Roselle. He had his dog under his desk when the tower was hit, and he credits her with helping get him out and away from the building only minutes before it collapsed and getting him down 78 floors out of the North Tower. There's so many stories like that. We'll never know all of them, and folks died trying to save other people that we'll never know the heroics of that. In the next hour, we will be replaying a broadcast we aired originally for 9/11/2018. It includes some pieces of audio and information that some folks say they've never heard. Various pieces of information, sound clips. That's why we're airing that again. I just don't want this day to go by without folks taking a moment to reflect. Be you religious or not, at least acknowledge and mourn for that loss that day. In your own way, mark this day. As always, we appreciate you joining us and hearing this hour and staying with us to hear the second hour. And, of course, both will then later be posted as podcast at Larry Connors USA.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
You've been listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.